Hi, and welcome back to Give Us Morgue. It's just Neve today. So, one of our microphones has decided to give up on life on us. Woo for that! So, it's sadly just me. I feel lost without my homie to, like, back me up and make me feel more confident. Go easy on me. We are trying to sort out the microphone situation as quickly as we can, but of course, it literally happened today, so... Yeah, so it's just me today. So, you know, hop on over to Instagram at Give Us Morgue or onto Twitter at Give Us Morgue and show Megan some love. Tell her how much you miss her. Be like, we miss you, Megan. You're amazing. And whilst you're doing that, if you felt like it, you could always leave us a review or go check out our website, www.giveusmorgue.com, where there is updates on just episodes and research and get to know us and stuff like that. You can also follow our own Instagrams at megpowell_ and at mrs_Neve. What? My voice cracked. mrs_Neve. And yeah, check out other episodes of the podcast if you haven't done so already. So I'm just going to jump right in onto my case. So my case today, I was actually really super excited to tell Megan about. So Megan, listen carefully. It is the Hex House murder. It's about witches. I love it. It's great. Okay, witches are awesome. And everything that I tell you is 1000% real. And it's not the writings of Delunged. I don't know what I tried to say there. It's not the writings of a deranged madman. So, John Blymeyer was born 1895 into a family of farmers and witches in York County, Pennsylvania. His family was descendants of German settlers. This part of Pennsylvania state during this time was called Hex Belt, as there was a lot of witchcraft, which is a kick-ass name for a state, if you don't mind me saying so. Okay, someone go name a state Hex Belt. Yeah, I just live in Hex Belt. John's family were what were known as powwowers, which meant that they dealt with healing, hexes, and other types of witchcraft. So to me, they were almost like what us Irish would consider people with the cure. If you remember, we talked about that in Bridget Cleary throwback. Go check that episode out if you haven't already. She was possessed by a changeling, which is basically an evil fairy. But you know, to me, it's kind of like the same thing, but American style, if you will. During this time, people would sooner see a powwower than an actual medic and believed that the likes of a common cold would be the result of a hex. Because, you know, what else would it be? Not the cold weather. Powwowers used the Bible as a sort of bookcraft. I am so sorry. I don't know what's wrong with me today. They would use the Bible as a sort of book of crafts. They believed in Christianity, even though there was a sense of paganism to witchcraft. So that is very uncommon for witches to believe in Christianity, because witchcraft is a form of paganism. So it was kind of like, what the fuck? They would also use a book by John George Holman called Long Lost Friend as a grimoire of sorts, which is like a type of book of spells, if you will. So John was born into a family of respected powwowers. His father and grandfather were very skilled, and John began to inherit the supernatural abilities. By the age of 4, John began to get visions, so his grandfather began to educate him in the ways of powwowing. At the age of 5, the family had to take John to another powwower named Nelson Raymeyer. Alert, alert, remember that name? Who was supposedly a very powerful powwower. That is a tongue twister. With reports that he was able to conjure the demon Beelzebub. John was suffering from an illness that was more than likely due to malnutrition, but the family felt like it was a hex. Someone hexed my 5-year-old son and gave him malnutrition. It's not that we don't feed him, you insane person. Nelson took John to his basement and a half hour later came back up Suspish, I think so. And told the family to make John pee before sunrise, then boil an egg in said pee, then poke 3 holes in the egg with a needle. And it had to be a needle, okay? It could not be anything else. Had to be a needle. And then leave it on top of an anthill. Nelson promised that John would be cured when the ants ate the egg. And a few months later, John was cured. Was it because John ate some fruit and veg? Or was it because the ants ate John's egg soaked in urine? You tell me. I know what I believe. It's definitely the egg. At the age of 7, it's said that John cured his grandfather from bladder complications. His family then sent John to school at the age of 8. So John, didn't start school until 8. He was, 4 years behind. okay. Teachers then described him as being, quote, dull, slow, which I feel like is such an insult. He's 8, leave him alone. At the age of 10, he began working for Nelson Raymeyer, digging up potatoes on Nelson's farm. John was actually becoming quite a popular witch or powwower. However, powwowers cannot charge a fee for their work or help. They can accept donations. Catholic Church. Yeah, so, if you felt like dropping $20, you can do that. I'm not saying I charge $20. I'm just saying if you had it, I'd accept it. So anyway, because of this, there wasn't much money to be made in the art of powwowing. So at the age of 13, John dropped out of school and got himself a job at a cigar factory. So John only went to school from 8 years of age till 13 years of age. I feel like that's enough. I feel like that's plenty. One day, while John and his co-workers were coming out of the factory, a rabid dog, which was said to be foaming at the mouth, was coming towards them all. And they were all like, oh my fucking god, we're all gonna fucking die. But John just calmly walked up to the dog, put his hand on the dog's head, whispered some type of incantation, then drew in the air a cross above the dog's head, and magically the dog calmed down, stopped foaming at the mouth, and then followed John home. As you do. So you think after this happened that this would make John a very popular powwower. However, John's health started to decline. Already thin, John began losing weight rapidly and could not eat or sleep. And at one point it said that he weighed about 100 pounds. So that's scary thin. John took this, though, that some jealous powwower had hexed him so he wouldn't steal their thunder. He was like, what? No, I'm not malnourished. Someone's hexed me again. So, at this time, all John cared about was getting rid of the hex. But unfortunately, in powwow magic, you need to know who's hexed you to remove it. So he was like, who done it? Tell me. I swear I won't get mad. Just want to powwow again. So John became obsessed with getting rid of the hex. He had his father and his grandfather try several times, but they couldn't remove it. So then he saw every witch and powwower that he knew, but again, nobody could remove it. He was losing his own ability to perform magic due to the hex and became extremely paranoid, nervous, and twitchy. So he became deranged. One night while in bed, John heard an owl outside of his window hooting 7 times. So this led him to the conclusion that his great-grandfather had hexed him from the grave, as his great-grandfather was the 7th son of the 7th son, and in witchcraft this means that his great-grandfather had immense power. So John, being the crazy lunatic that he was, basically it was like, my dead great-grandfather is trying to hex me and kill me because I'm going to be a better powwower than he is, and I'm not even a 7th son of the 7th son, you bitch. For realsies. So with this in his head, John decided to leave his family home. He started living at rooming houses and began working, just doing odd jobs here and there. And then when John was 18, he met Lily Halloway, the 17-year-old daughter of the landlord of the rooming house that he was living in. So all of this was seeming to work, like living out of home, working, dating Lily, was all kind of seeming to go in his favour. And he was starting to eat and sleep again, and he was putting weight back on. And then John and Lily got married in 1917. But shortly afterwards, the hex started to begin again, with some of the symptoms kind of starting back up. John went and saw an actual doctor this time, however, who told John, quote, "You're only hexed because you think you are hexed," end quote. Now, I feel like maybe that's a smart man. John disagreed. John didn't believe the doctor, so he left and was like, "You bitch, don't know what you're talking about." And he just tried to ignore the hex. He was like, "The symptoms are only minor. I'm just going to continue living my life. Be fine. Again, it's not me being malnourished. It's a hex. That doctor is stupid." So John and Lily had three children, but sadly two of them died shortly after Lily gave birth to them. This trauma caused John to spiral. It caused him to get extremely ill and become extremely depressed. John then decided to go see a very powerful powwow doctor named Andrew Lenhart. Andrew was so powerful that even the police would leave him alone. They let him do whatever he wanted. It is said that if Andrew Lenhart hexed you, you would need to conjure the devil himself to remove it. I mean, I'd leave the fucker alone too, to be honest. I'm like, ha ha ha, do whatever. Just don't hex me. I don't want to see Satan himself. Thank you. Going around with a cross around my neck like, ha ha, love you. Andrew told John that whoever had hexed him, it was someone that was close to him. So naturally, even though he was hexed before he met her, John immediately suspected his wife, Lily. So Lily immediately like began to fear for her life the minute he was like, "It's you." So Lily got the help of her father because she feared that John was actually going to kill her. He got John to see a psychiatrist who told him he had psychological problems. He was like, "You need help." He told John that he needed to enter a mental institution, which John agreed to. And shortly afterwards, Lily filed for divorce. After spending some time in the state mental institution, John decided it was time that he left. He was like, "Okay, I've stayed here long enough." So he walked out the front door unbothered. Apparently during this time, it was actually very common because the state mental institutions were just being given patient after patient that they weren't actually able to keep track of who was coming and going. So it was very easy for him to just walk out the front door. No one looked for him and no one tried to have him recommitted when he returned home. So there's also that. They were just like, "Okay, you're out. Cool." John started working at the cigar factory again, and here he befriended 14-year-old John Curry. Curry thought his whole life was a hex, which, I mean, same, but okay. His stepfather was physically and mentally abusive and would beat him regularly, and his mother would just sit idly by while it happened. So he was like, "You know, you're hexed, I'm hexed. Let's become best buds." That's what they did. Bonding over hexing. As you do. They also befriended a farmer named Milton Hess, who felt he and his wife were hexed. The farm had always done really well until one day suddenly the crops started to wilt away and their livestock started to waste away. Livestock. Their livestock, even. Okay, it's hard when you're by yourself, everybody. So, before I get into the dirty details, we're just going to take a quick ad break. And welcome back from the ad break. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope it was something interesting and not something stupid like 1, 2, 3, da-da. What ad annoys you the most, everybody? What's the, like, one ad that when you see it on TV, you're like, "Oh, not this ad again." Mine's the, have you seen it on, it's on YouTube, and it's like, "Do you have straight teeth? Then this ad's not for you." And it's like a 10-minute ad and you're like, "That's not a fucking ad." That's my pet peeve. Okay, Moving on. John became more and more obsessed about who was hexing him and his friends. So he sought out the help of Nellie Knoll, the River Witch of Marietta. Oh, so exotic. I love it. I immediately, and I know this happens in Pennsylvania, but that just makes me think of New Orleans. And like, you know, like the Princess and the Frog, the movie, and the witch, the like voodoo lady in that movie. Yeah, that's what I immediately think of when I say the sentence, River Witch of Marietta. This witch told John he was being hexed by a member of the Raymeyer family. It took her 6 sessions to reveal all. She told John that he was being hexed by Nelson Raymeyer. Yeah. At first, John didn't believe her and was like, prove it. So she got John to pull out a dollar bill and to hold it in the palm of his hands. The witch then said some incantation, and when she pulled the dollar bill away, there on John's skin was a picture of Nelson Raymeyer. Swear this happened. Swear. Swear. Okay. Not at all ramblings. True. Okay. It's true. Even if it's not true, I hope it is, because how lit is that? The witch told John that if he wanted to break the hex, he would have to either bury some of Nelson's hair 6 feet in the ground, or burn his copy of Long Lost Friend. As you do. On November 28th, 1928, John Blymeyer, John Curry, and Milton Hess's 18-year-old son, Wilbert, all went to visit Nelson Raymeyer. They were like, let's just go have a friendly chat, okay? It's just going to be a friendly chat. We're going to either get a lock of his hair or the book, okay? And according to John, they all brought rope and some sticks just in case. Swearsies, it was just in case. Swearsies. When they got to Nelson's home, no one was there, and the men looked around but they couldn't find the book. So they decided to go visit Nelson's estranged wife, Alice. She told them that Nelson was probably out seeing some woman. Like, probably out seeing some whore. Fucking leave me at home, bitch. As you do. She wasn't at all bitter. They all left her home and decided that they would go back to Nelson's house later that night. So it got close to around midnight when they all went back up to Nelson Raymeyer's house. Nelson let them in, was like, come on in for a nightcap. My dear friends of mine. Nelson was 60 years old at the time, weighing about 200 pounds and was about 6'3". He was a big boy. Big boy. I don't know what that was.
But I said it. It's there. It's out in the open.
Okay.
They demanded Nelson give him either a lock of his hair or his copy of the book. And when he denied them, a struggle ensued. It took all 3 men to hold Nelson down on the ground. When he eventually agreed to give them his copy of Long Lost Friend. So according to John, when they let Nelson up, he lunged at all 3 men. So naturally, as you do, all 3 men started to attack him in self-defense, because one man lunged at all 3 of these men.
Okay.
All 3 men beat Nelson mercilessly. At one point, one of them attempted to strangle him, and when that didn't work, just went back to beating him. Nelson was beat past the point of recognition. John claimed that it was John Curry who had hit the fatal blow to Nelson when he picked up some firewood beside his feet and hit Nelson until blood came out his ears. Which, I mean, unnecessary, okay? Unnecessary.
What? Because he wouldn't give you a book? Jeez, Louise.
Maybe he didn't have one.
Did you ever think of that, guys?
No, they did not. Then John Blymeyer shouted out something to the effect of, thank God the witch is dead. Which immediately made me think of that song. Ding dong, the witch is dead. The wicked witch.
Yeah. But I mean also, like, RIP John Raymeyer, Nelson Raymeyer even.
It is so unnecessary though. Like, Jesus. You're not hexed. You're malnourished. Get it together.
My voice. Then they all decided that they should need to make it look like a robbery and began robbing the place of all of its money, which accumulated to roughly $2, which I know back then is like, you know, probably somewhat okay, but also not really worthy of robbing. It'd be like breaking into someone's home and finding like a 50 euro note. Worth it? I think not. They looked for the book, but they could not find it. So in a panic, they poured gasoline all around Nelson's body and set the old farmhouse on fire. However, the fire just seemed to go out, even though it was a really old farmhouse and rightfully should have actually gone up in flames very easily. Like, according to reports, it's very odd that the house didn't catch fire. Work of magic! The three men forgot about the fact that earlier in the night, they went and saw Nelson's estranged wife, Alice, and asked specifically where Nelson was. So they all went home. I think John Blymeyer claims that Nelson died November 29th at like 12:03 a.m. because he checked the time or some shit like that. Because, you know, it's most important to check the time after murdering somebody so you can get a straight up alibi. So the body was found on November 30th by a neighbour when the neighbour went up to check, I think, on Nelson from what I could find and found his body. And this was the day after. So Nelson died on Thanksgiving. So then the day after Thanksgiving, November 30th, he was found. When police began asking questions, Alice immediately told them about John Blymeyer, John Curry and Wilbert Hess. She was like, yeah. So these three lads came looking for my ex-husband. Sob, sob, sob. Miss him very much. Wasn't a bitter old ex-wife. Catch him! The three men were immediately arrested and immediately confessed without really being pushed too hard. So John Blymeyer actually bragged about killing the man who had hexed him and was not actually at all too sympathetic about the fact that somebody, you know, had died. So the press had a field day with the murder, calling it the hex murder and the witchcraft murder. The press made Pennsylvania Dutch look really bad and made it seem like powwowing was really, really bad, that it was all silly magic and everyone was hexing each other. And they made it seem like powwowers believed in devil worship and all sorts of shit. They basically, which was really sad because three morons ruined the reputation of powwowers and powwow magic, which reportedly, like, powwowers were all just really into healing each other and that kind of magic, not actual hexing and that shit. So it was really sad because three morons ruined their reputation. The trial, which became known as the York Witch Trials, began on January 9th, 1929, and was overseen by Judge Ray P. Sherwood. The trial was naturally a press circus because of the fact that it involved witches. However, the judge did not believe in witchcraft, so he had any mention of it removed from the three men's confessions and changed the motive for the murder to robbery. Round of applause. Round of applause. He was like, no, okay, I'm not gonna have a trial where I'm like, why did you kill him? And they're like, because witchcraft and hexes. Y'all tried to rob him, so that's what y'all gonna be tried for. During the trial, it said that Blymeyer was actually very cold towards everything that was like being spoken about, because at the end of the day, they were speaking about the like brutal murder, because he was beat past recognition. So, and he was just sitting there like, yeah, whatever. It said at one point, Blymeyer was saying that since Nelson Raymeyer was buried along with all of his hair, that meant that the hex was undone. So it didn't really matter if John was dead or if Nelson was dead or not, because all John had to do to defeat the hex was to either bury some of Nelson's hair 6 feet in the ground or to burn the copy of the book. So seeing as Nelson Raymeyer was buried 6 feet underground along with all of his hair, he beat the hex. Worth it. That's what he was saying. I'm not saying it was worth it.
He stated that he had no regrets about what he had done, and if he had to, he would do it again.
Like, wow. The more you know.
John Blymire and John Curry were both sentenced with first degree murder, both getting life in prison, and Wilbert Hess was sentenced with second degree murder, so he got 10 to 20 years in prison. Eventually, Hess and Curry both got parole in 1934. John Curry then went on to fight in World War... Oh my god. I wrote World War III.
Oh my god, I'm predicting the future. I hope not. I don't want to... I've lived through a pandemic. That's enough, okay? Don't make me live through a world war.
So John Curry went on to fight in World War II. Because World War III hasn't happened yet. He then apparently became a well-known artist.
Yeah, that's what my research said. Now, I don't know who the fuck John Curry is, but,
you know, I also wasn't around in the 1930s. So, John Blymire was denied parole a handful of times. Then eventually, in 1953, at the age of 56, he was eventually released. He went on to do some odd jobs here and there, even buying a house at some point, and basically lived the rest of his life unbothered, which is a bit annoying. Nelson Ray Meyer's great-grandson now owns the house in which the murders happened. It has many names, such as Ray Meyer Hollow, Hex Hollow, Hex House, and Hex Murder House, all of which are lit as fuck. I especially love Hex Hollow. I just feel like that could be a horror movie. Okay, feel like that could be a horror movie. You can go see the house, and in October you can actually take a hayride around the property. According to people, the burn mark from when John Blymire, John Curry, and Wilbert Hess tried to burn Nelson's body is still on the floor. Apparently, Nelson's great-grandson put, like, protective glass over it so that, like, it won't get destroyed. So it's, like, which, I mean, I would do too. If I lived in a murder house, you're telling me you're not going to try and make money from that? Really? It involves witches in Pennsylvania in the 1920s. And you're going to tell me you're not going to try and make money from that?
Okay.
What else? So, some of the murderer's family still to this day believe that they had no choice but to kill Nelson, as he was hexing them. Like, still, in 2021, family members of Blymire, Curry, and Hess family are like, they did what they gotta do. Okay? Now, Nelson's family maintain that Nelson Raymire was just an innocent farmer and didn't actually own a copy of Long Lost Friend. However, in my research, it said that Nelson cured John when he was 5. So, I don't know. You make up your own assumptions. But that is the Hex House murder, and I think it's pretty lit because it's about witches and I love witches. That's all I gotta say on that. Again, guys, if you really enjoyed this episode, I'm sorry Megan's not here. She's here in spirit giving me the giggles. I'm sorry it was a hectic episode. We will most certainly get working on getting new microphones for you so that the quality can, I hope, only improve. We're not a year just yet, so we're still learning, okay? After the year mark, I feel like I won't be able to use that excuse anymore, but we're still learning. So if you really like this episode, make sure and go check out some of our other episodes where Megan is in and you can hear us have the lols. If you really enjoyed the episode and if you really enjoy us as a podcast, we would really super appreciate it. Again, I know I said it at the start of the episode. I'm just going to say it again. If you would leave a review,
Also, you can check out our website, www.giveusmorg.com, where there is updates about the episodes. You can also see some like photos of us and bits about us. You can see other people's reviews that they've left for us. And there's also a link for you to donate money just towards the podcast in general, which again, don't feel like you have to do, but it's there if you do. I sound like the Plymires and Powwowers. I don't charge a fee, but if you want to leave a donation, I'm kidding. You don't have to at all leave a donation. Not one bit, but it's there. And you can also check out our Instagram and our Twitter. Both are at Give Us Morg. And you can check out our own personal Instagrams at MegPowell_ and at Mrs_Neve. And go over to our latest post on Instagram and leave a comment telling Megan how much you missed her this episode, because it would really make her day. Okay, thank you for listening. Bye.